Again, thank you for being with us. And I'm wondering if we could start off with your introducing us to one of these poems.
Yes, thank you, Kate, for the opportunity. I very much appreciate it. And I brought along some excerpts from it. And the first one is Still Point. And I think it has the title of it is indicative of something. I think that poetry tries to give us a focus. And I think Wendell Berry once said that poetry ought to remind us of what we've forgotten. So each day, most of us see, we're aware of, especially in the summertime, when darkness gives way to light and light gives way to darkness. So I was sitting out one summer evening. It was so beautiful. And I think I spent probably 2 or 3 hours out in this chair, about glued to it. And I heard sounds, I heard birds, I heard all sorts of things. And then all of a sudden, it was just dark. And out of what had happened, even though I was aware of some of the things taking place, I couldn't really get a hold of it until I tried to put it into words. So the result is Still Point, and this is the way it goes. Life, movement, memory, mimesis, play, human expression of freedom, inner freedom, spaces of quietness, stars, sky spaces, bird songs fading into the twilight, sun dropping behind the horizon, raises a hoot owl and the invisible rain crow, winds calmed, starlight and darkness, moon slivered, sitting motionless amid the universe, dwarfed but not small, a roving consciousness, barely stirring but receptive to the world fallen into the darkness of resurrection. All objects melted into the still of the night. As God's voice thunders into the hushness of silence, and the beauty of it all makes us bleed God's blood as it pierces the senses like a Damascus sword.
You're there, aren't you? Sitting in your chair in the back.
You're
in the
exactly
moment.
Right. There was a little celebration there, and mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what we try to do, to get a sense of focus, to catch the fleeting moment, and recalls us to ourselves in many ways. And I think in that way, poetry is not only beautiful, but in some sense therapeutic, maybe.
Another.
All right. I'd like to do another short poem called Came the Horses. This has been published in another journal, by the way. I was on a trip on a four-lane coming home, and I was the passenger. And I was, like most people, taking in the scenery. It was a summer, beautiful day. The scenery was beautiful. It was flat farms and then rolling hills. There were all kinds of cattle and horse farms and what have you. And we went through a straight stretch, and suddenly, off to the right, there was a hill and a valley. And I looked down, and I saw a group of horses running. And it just struck me as being so, so beautiful and moving. And, of course, when you're in a car doing 60 miles an hour, that kind of scene does not last long. So this was another attempt, I think, to fix the moment, as it were. And the way this one turned out is a little bit different from Still Point. So here is Came the Horses. Gliding down the road so smoothly, humming along as the rolling land flashes by the road ahead, ribbons into the pointed distance, the viewer and its object, the tinted glass in between. Then suddenly a hill falls over into a deep, long glen, where 15 or so horses of all makes and colors are galloping, cavorting, and skimming over the green. A couple kicking their heels as the huge lead roan, nostrils flaring, head held high and mane flying, striding, oh, striding, more beautiful and graceful than life itself. A sudden rigor of needle points invades the torso, accompanied by burning watering of the eyes, fighting tears away, The head turns, gazing wistfully at the disappearing scene. Movement gone. Lines in motion dissolving. Part of the heart torn out. Bleeding an all too brief memory. Sitting, shaking, spent as after lengthy lovemaking and earth-shaking orgasm. Whence came such a riot and gamut of emotion? What was the speed, beauty, form and movement, and power of those creatures to this pale existence?
Tell me something. How long did came the horses percolate?
A good while. I had commented on how lovely it was at the moment, of course. And horses, of course, have always been symbols of power and beauty. And the more I thought about it, the more I kept trying to capture something about it. And I ended up then one day thinking, what a difference in that kind of expression of power and beauty and our own expressions of it, how different it is. And of course, the horses were not aware of me or other people traveling up and down the road. But a person could hardly view that and not be taken into some other realm, I think, and have some great realization. And it's for that reason, you know, I don't know how people can be cruel to animals. They're just so beautiful and so wonderful, such wonderful creatures. So it kind of all came together in this. I worked on it a good while.
Now, Charles, you call yourself a troglodyte. But it's because you've led a life of literature, and you have
yes.
some thoughts about literature and poetry in today's life and in today's education.
Yeah, I might make a point or two. I think the humanities are so important, and I think they've been eroded a great deal. I feel that it's the humanities that gives us this kind of power of fixing the moment and learning certain things that otherwise it's very hard to learn. I might invoke here a fellow who wrote recently in The Big Switch, Nicholas Carr, and he said that every change is a generational change. Technology moves so rapidly that our young people are the embracers of the technology, and they lose the past. The holders of the past are the older people, their parents and people like me, I suppose. And
moi.
Yes, and so I think he says what happens finally is they're pushed to the margins, and they have all these wonderful memories about the goodness in their life, which they seem to evaporate in the changes that have been made. And he said, for this reason, this is the point, technology always seems to be right. Technology always seems to hold the foe. And any criticism of it is very often just water off the duck's back, so to speak. But the losses, he says, finally are very important, that we save those. So that's back to my original point. I think the function, a very important function of poetry, is to try to save as many of those memories and losses as we possibly can.
I don't even know if I want to disappoint you with this next subject matter, but yesterday's Wall Street Journal had an article on the front page, that began on the front page, about how the teaching of cursive is leaving our schools.
I saw that. Yes. Yes, that's right.
Would you care to expand on that? Well, I thought of you when I saw it and thought, oh, my goodness.
I think it's very difficult. Of course, I span several decades here, and it's so hard to realize the changes, you know, that have taken place. And they are, we're so used to change now that sometimes we have no standard by which to change. For example, just today I was reading, I think it was in the Courier, that a school in Illinois has just almost declared war because so many of their students are having mental problems, breakdowns. They're bringing dogs to school, therapy dogs, trying to calm them down. And the idea is their pace is so fast, so much is laid on them. Well, that's the kind of world we live in, isn't it? And it would seem to me that we need to get a little elbow room and go back to some of the things. You know, the privatization is a big thing that's going on. And one of the first things that takes place in the privatization of education is to almost completely do away with the kind of humane things you and I are speaking about and to invoke online teaching, what's called teaching, and put increasing numbers, you know, make a teacher increasingly responsible for huge numbers of people. I think I read recently where something like 80% or more of people in the teaching profession now have a kind of adjunct stability there. There's no perks for them, no tenure, very little money. So education is under attack, you see. That is traditional education. And I think without some of the tradition putting back in education, I think our sense of responsibility and even citizenship is affected. I wouldn't doubt today that the mess we have in politics is not partially that part of that problem.
Will you be writing more?
I hope so. I'm working on a longer poem now called Sansara, but most of my poems are small, short.
The topic for your essays?
What I did was to pick what I thought were some of the better ones that I had either published or presented as papers in scholarly meetings. And the reason for doing that was to try to keep alive names. People like Jeffers and Fitzgerald, who may not be read anymore in literature classes, because these are people still worth reading. They're the real coin. They don't go out of date. They're not like newspapers, and they're not like the fads that come down in education. So it was to kind of bring that, renew that, and hope somebody would see that, you know, and say, hey, I want to read that.
Excellent. Excellent. Like our guest earlier, I guess last week, Steve Schneiderman from
yes,
the College of
yes.
Science.
Nice gentleman.
Writing brings you joy.
You're right. It is a very, very rewarding thing. And also, I'd like to say this, reading that gives you joy. So I encourage people to do reading and writing. I never will forget once in a freshman class that I was trying to teach a sentence outline, which can be rather boring, I know. But one young man got very irritated, and he finally stood up in the class, and he said, I didn't come. I said, what did you come to school for? And he stood up and said, I didn't come to do no writing. And I said, what are you going to be when you grow up? And he said, well, a lawyer. And I said, you really believe that people are going to come and put their lives and properties in your hand, and you're not going to be adept at reading and writing? Well, it confused him a little, and he kind of got mad. But I think that's often the kind of thing we run into. And we, you know, we do a lot of screen watching these days, too, don't we?
Gosh, it's been awfully good to have you here today.
You. I've enjoyed it, Kate.
I hope you'll come back.
Oh, well, thank you. I'd enjoy it sometime. I'll scrap up some more if you want me to.
Excellent, okay. Excellent. Again, Charles Daudet is professor emeritus, the Department of English, where he taught literature for 33 years at Murray State University, and he has 3 volumes available at the Murray State University Bookstore. Their titles, again, are Gatherings and Losses, Flickering Hearth, The Lost Tradition, Poetic Reaches, Here and There, Now and Then is the third, and we look forward to the next.
Thank you so much, Kate. I appreciate it.